Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is your... Is this Glenn?
Yeah, this is Bob Kramer in California.
Hi, Bob Kramer. Hi, how are you?
Fine, thank you. Yourself?
Very good. Looking forward to today's class.
did Dave send out the slides for this session?
Did send out the slides last night. I have not gotten the revised book yet.
Oh, I got that. I didn't get the slide.
Oh. Okay. Yeah, I would mention that to him.
Huh.
Yeah. When you got the book, was it through CTA or was it through Dave himself?
I'm sorry?
When you got the new book?
Yes.
With the corrections, did you get it through Coach Training Alliance or through Dave?
No, through Dave. He sent it out immediately last night. I'm sorry.
Oh, I didn't get that one.
I think I got it this morning. So you might have sent it last night.
I'll have to look at it because I did get the slides last night.
Oh, you did?
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't I get them?
I'm not sure. Oh. He might have sent some to some people and... Yeah, maybe something else to somebody else. I guess we'll have to see. I'm just going to check online while we're waiting for others.
Yeah, yeah. I've got session one. Let me do this.
Yeah, I'm just going in.
No, didn't get them.
You didn't get the slides.
Hi, buddy.
Hi, Dave.
Hi, how we doing out there?
Okay, well, we were just discussing, Bob Kramer got the slides, got the book, the revised book, but not the slides, and I got the slides, but not the revised book.
No, I just found the session two slide.
On the session three.
Dave?
Bob's still out there?
No, I think he lost his connection, but he was just saying that he did get the slides. I'm going back into my email to see if I got the revised book. I didn't see it, but I'll take another look.
Okay. Let's see who we've got present. Do we have Ruby?
Woo! Hi, right here.
Well, you and I should get along famously then.
Talking all about you tonight, Ruby.
Right on.
How do you really feel about it, Ruby?
And Kathleen. Kathleen? Angela.
Right here.
There we go. And Susan. No Susan? And Bob's not back yet, sounds like, right?
Who?
Bob?
Bob, present for duty.
There he is. All right. And Beth.
Yes, here.
And Venice. Venice. Michael.
I'm here.
And Yolanda.
Present.
Glenn. No. Jonathan. Terry.
I'm here tonight.
Very good. And Wendy.
Wendy's here.
Wendy's here. Donna.
I'm here.
And Felicity. Felicity. So I'm missing Kathy or Kathleen.
I'm here. Kathleen's here.
All right. Send Susan. Denise. Glenn, Jonathan, and Felicity. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and get started. We're going to get to deeply involved in the D's and the I's today. And I will say I did notice a mistake I made. I sent you guys out the slides. I sent you guys out the slides that were fully filled in. Where's the fun in that? Ooh. Yes, so I will fix that going forward. You'll have more places to take good, interesting notes in the future. So, before we start, let's just ask the very basic question. Are there any questions you guys have after our first session that you've been dying to ask and haven't had a chance to yet? No? Okay. Well, then let's go back and spend a little time reviewing what we did last night. So we talked a little bit about the history of DISC. And you guys can see it in front of you because you have everything already filled in for you. Dr. William Moulton Marston, who wrote the book, The Emotions of Normal People, back in 1928, which later turned into the DISC assessment in 1972 at the University of Minnesota. The two PhDs who created that later split apart into two different companies. One of them is Carlson Learning. The other is Target Training International. Carlson Learning eventually evolved into Inscape that I use today. We discussed all things that DISC does not measure because it's equally important to know what it does and what it doesn't measure, so you can see how you can affect different people with what their behaviors are. Does it measure your intelligence, your desire, your values, emotional intelligence, all of those things it does not measure, but it measures certain things very well. Remember, we use the phrase that people are different, but in some key ways they are predictably different. We discussed the three graphs. Can someone describe to me the graph that says the mask? What's that all about? I remember.
What you want everybody else to say.
Good. And it comes from what set of answers?
That you say the most to, the words that you say the most. It's how you want to see yourself.
Right, so it's the words that you say are most like you create the graph one, which is the mask. So the second one is called the core. And what's that one about?
That's all the...
Like you.
Those are the ones that are least, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That are least like you. And what does that tell you about yourself?
Learn.
Those are the traits that you least, or not traits, but behaviors that you least like to recognize in yourself, and the ones that really need to be worked on.
Well, those are the ones that are at your very core, the ones that are learned from early childhood.
Right.
Yeah. They're not necessarily bad traits at all. They're just what you're going to result back to under pressure. And what about graph three?
It's the combination.
The combination of the most and the least. And how is that viable to us?
Well, it shows how a person acts kind of under pressure sometimes.
I think, hi, this is Lynn. Apologize for coming in late. I think I got the nature of the question was looking at the graph, how are they, the three different graphs, about a value to us? Am I correct?
That third graph, what does it mean? And how do we use it?
The third one, but I'm not looking at the graphs right now. I've just got my slides for session number two with me here. But the third graph is the combination of the two. Is that right?
Combination of the two together, the most and the least.
It's the truest depiction of self.
There we go. It's the mirror, the truest depiction of your real self. It comes from graph three. All right, good. And when we compare all three graphs, what's the value of comparing all three graphs? Why do we do
that? Checking for consistency.
Okay. And what if they're inconsistent?
There's something wrong.
Yeah. We're not exactly sure what at this point in time. We can get into that more depth later on. But, yeah, something's not quite right. If the three graphs are not consistent, there's something going on. But more importantly, usually they are consistent, and you know you've got a good solid profile of a person who's comfortable with themselves. Okay. Anybody care to take a whack at explaining the Johari window to us?
This is Beth. It has to do with the four quadrants of what we know about ourselves and what other people know about ourselves, what we consciously reveal and what we subconsciously know that other people can see or that neither of us know. So the quadrants are what we know and what they know.
Yeah. So the arena describes what we know about each other. There are parts that are hidden from your view about me that I keep hidden behind my mask. There are parts that you see about me that I don't see about myself, my blind spots. And there's the great unknown, the future, potential. And the goal, both in coaching and through using DISC, is to expand that arena area. That is what you know about me and I know about me. When they get into the arena, either we can communicate and make some coaching progress. All right. So in your slides, you've got you have a copy of the DISC chart. You might want to pull that out, that behavioral style chart. And keep it handy. We're going to start discussing that a little bit now. So you'll notice that the upper and lower quadrants are the active and thoughtful, and polar opposites. Right-hand side, people-oriented or accepting. Left-hand side, task-oriented or questioning. And those four quadrants make up the fundamentals known as our DISC behavioral style. Now, you've got arrows on these lines that go across there. You guys see the arrows on there.
Uh-huh.
These things are arrows, not just lines, because whatever quadrant you fall into, there's a matter of degree.
Uh-huh.
You may be a high I, and I may be a high I, but maybe your I is much higher than mine. So you're going to show more of the traits and behaviors of the high I than I might. So the higher, as you fall into that chart, the higher you are in there, the more you're going to show that behavioral style. You know, maybe something that's primary for you, it may not be as high as some others. You'll also notice there are a set of lines that depict the opposites. So the D and the S are opposites. The D being active and task-oriented, the S being thoughtful or quiet or reserved, and people-oriented. So what happens when you put a D and an S together in a room?
I do this all the time for my training. This is Angela. I don't know if you guys know, last night I mentioned that I'm a coach and I work for a real estate company, and one of the interactive classes that I teach is how to teach the D to sell to the S and how to teach the S to sell to the D and vice versa with the I and the C. It's not easy.
Yeah. What makes it so hard?
It's like oil and water.
It's like oil and water. Yeah. So they have very opposite behavioral styles. Now, they can blend together nicely to form a complete, or a complete person, if you will, or a complete relationship. Or they may turn into you against me. Likewise, the I and the C are opposites for the very same reasons. The I's being active and people-oriented, and the C's being more thoughtful and task-oriented. They can be opposites. Now, what's interesting is that D's and S's tend to be a little more quiet. And quiet's not really the right word for it, because D's certainly aren't quiet. They're very active. But they don't tend to talk a lot or say a lot of words. Likewise, the S's also are more reserved and not as inclined to talk. Whereas the I's are very loquacious and love to talk, and the C's aren't going to talk at first, but when you get them going on something that interests them, they're going to talk a lot. So we're going to get into these things a little deeper here tonight and talk about how the styles come together. We're going to focus tonight on the D's and the I's, with the S's and the C's for next time.
Okay.
But let's go ahead and start with the story of the high D. Now, you guys read about the high D's, right, in your reading for tonight?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, someone could describe a high D for me?
Sorry. Opinionated, directly out there with judgment on that. Very direct, short, what they want to see done. Like, take the action to get it done. They will easily take ownership to direct the action. Really do like to control their surroundings.
Okay. And
Go ahead. I'm a high D, so generally happen at workplace. So if an I, S, or a C come at me to try to use their high D side, I'll just run them over.
Okay. And
bulldozer. We call that a bulldozer.
They call that a bulldozer.
Exactly. You got to approach high D's differently.
Yeah. So what do D's tend to focus on?
Results.
Get it done.
Yeah, results. Get it done. What's next?
That's so
okay, this is a problem. Okay, I fixed that one. What's next? What's the next thing for me to solve here? Oh, I'll fix that. What's next after that?
This is Yolanda. With the D's, from my understanding, is that they may get the task done, but may have missed some details along the way.
Are they important details?
It could be, but the D doesn't see it that way.
Yeah. So the D may not pay as much attention to details as, for example, the S or the C would, but it's done.
Yeah, they work best from
the wall. Yes,
not
flush against the top and bottom, but I built the wall. It's going to keep most of the stuff out of the house. It's going to be okay. Yeah. So Ds don't necessarily give you all that level of detail that others might. What about the fears and emotions of a high D? What's a high D kind of afraid of or concerned about?
Loss of control.
Loss of control. Yeah, because I'm in charge.
Failure.
Yeah. We use that phrase, being taken advantage of. So D's tend to go, are they telling me the truth? D's tend to be skeptical. See that we have a mirror out there someplace we're looking into? And what's the natural emotion of that high D?
Anger.
Yeah. So does that mean D's are angry people?
No.
Of course not. What's that mean when they say the natural emotion, though, is anger?
Because of they have a high degree of fear when they lose control of things. So, you know, instead of going deep to look at the fear, their first trigger is, comes to anger first.
And you used a very important word. You used the word appear. So D's sometimes appear to be angry, even when really they're not that. They're not really angry, but it tends to look like anger.
Would you say that's more of a defense mechanism?
I guess you got down into psychology, you probably say a defense mechanism, yeah. They expect people to be as smart as they are, and by the way, all D's are naturally brilliant, that not measured through DISC, but it just happens to be true, I've discovered.
To them anyway, right?
yeah. So, if people aren't as fast as they are, they tend to get annoyed, and it kind of shows that way. So let me tell you a story here about the high D. So the high D, at their best, are confident and self-assured. They are natural leaders, and they're willing to charge the hill. They tend to be adventurous. They get bored with routine and like to shake things up and change things. Change is part of their natural makeup. And they're willing to change things if they think they see a better way. They also tend to be inquisitive, but often believe they know the answer before they even ask the question. Sound familiar?
Yes.
Yeah. Those some folks who might be like that?
Well, certainly.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
But that's not a bad thing, is it?
No,
those are the people that are running corporations.
They tend to run corporations because they tend to get things done. So here's the story of Sam. He's a fast-rising executive at a multinational company. He's come to you for some coaching. His reputation of a guy who gets things done and gets results. He's always looking for a better way to do things, and he oftentimes finds the better way. Sam surrounds himself with talented, take-charge-type people. He delegates to them because he trusts them, and knows they'll get things done well. So what is Sam's challenge? His support from the executive team was somewhat thin, because while the results have been outstanding, he's not built a lot of relationships with the other members of the executive team. No one believes they truly know him, and therefore the other executives aren't willing to put the rotations on the line to promote him. And Sam's come to you for coaching. So this is the high D executive. With their natural strength of a D, using those things properly, but even when they do those things well, they tend to have some challenges with things like relationships.
and being open. So we'll discuss coaching them in a few minutes, but we're going to get a picture of a high D who is a very positive role model of a high D.
Okay.
Let's talk about another high D. Because at their worst, the D can appear to be aloof and arrogant. They make demands of their subordinates, don't recognize good performance, they find faults, and they seldom give praise. They're big proponents of change, but they believe they know better than everybody else does, so they make decisions unilaterally. They appear to be cold and insensitive. They communicate in short, loud bursts, and seldom take time to explain things about their decisions and get buy-in. Does that sound familiar to anybody?
For sure.
Yeah.
I can recognize some bosses.
Just don't say some spouses. That would be the wrong thing to be saying here. But the first and the second there are both examples of a high D behavioral style, a very high D behavioral style. But they're very different in the way they approach things. But they're both high Ds. So Susie is a VP at a mid-sized company. She's in charge of operations and views it as her personal kingdom.
Nice.
Even from outside the company, with a resume that demonstrates one crowning achievement after another. Yet her old company refused to promote her. She's a problem solver, moves from one problem to the next, flies in like a tornado, eliminates underperformers and deadwood, proves the bottom line, then goes on to the next assignment. The team below her lacks talent, and her success is almost always attributed to her own strong will and determination. So what's her challenge? She appears to be wearing her welcome already in the new company, and the number of key people have left her organization. There's no place else for her to go, and she believes that she's being underutilized. Both examples of high D behavioral styles. Very different, yet very much the same. At their best and at their worst. Comments and questions before we go into the more detail here about this. Questions so far? Okay.
Well, I certainly, this is Yolanda. I'm just looking at the three stories that you gave us. And I'm just trying to see the difference between the second two and the first.
So the three what I gave you?
Of the three stories that you gave us? I think the first one was a bit more different than the second two. Am I correct?
Actually, I gave you a description. I gave you two descriptions and two stories.
Oh, okay. So the first one, okay, because I thought there were three. I'm sorry.
It's okay. I described a high D at their best, then told a story about a high D who was a good example of an at their best high D.
Okay.
And Kate described then the worst case scenario for a high D and told the story of Susie, who is not a fun high D to be around.
Okay. Thank you for clarifying that for me.
Okay, good. Now, here's the interesting part. You're going to find that there's some coaches out there who are high Ds. And as we already know, some of you are high Ds. So, as a coach, there are some tendencies you have to kind of be careful of. as a high D coach, you can be too direct with your clients and scare or intimidate them. They may not tell you that, but they may be feeling it. The high D, since they tend to be very task-oriented, can miss the emotion that's underneath the problem. And get so focused on getting the result, they miss the fact that the client is deeply hurting. The high D coach might try and shift the client into a new position too quickly. They may focus very heavily on tasks and actions. And because these are, say, they're very smart, they may want to give advice. And they may make assumptions about you getting things done and may not check in with you as an accountability partner. So if you're a high D coach, you think about how you're coaching and make sure you don't fall into some of these traps that a high D might fall into. Now, does that mean high Ds can't be great coaches?
No.
Anybody here know who Thomas Leonard was? Really?
No.
Wow. So Thomas Leonard is kind of known as the father of modern-day coaching. So he founded Coach U.
Huh.
He founded the ICF.
Oh, wow. I'm embarrassed.
He founded Coachville.
You're not alone.
Yeah. And now he passed away 10, 12 years ago at the age of like 48.
Oh.
But, you know, he built the idea of being open to coaching and listening to your clients and hearing what they had to say and helping them find their own solutions. Thomas Leonard was a high D of the utmost magnitude. One of my friends used to be a client of his when he first got started. And one day she called for a session, and Thomas started by saying, good to hear you. Happy here. You had three things you had to get done. Are they complete? She said, well, no. And he goes, well, then call back when they are. They hung up on her. She was a little annoyed. She called back right away. She said, my, you called back fast. Are those three things done? Well, no, but. And he hung up on her. So she went off and did the three things she was supposed to get done, called back and said, are those things done? She said, yes. He said, okay, now let's go.
Wow.
Now, was Thomas an effective coach? He is the father of coaching. He was a very good coach, but he's a classic high D.
I think he was very effective in that sense, you know, intimidating, yes, with that approach of hanging up on her, but he kind of forced her in the right direction.
He forced her.
So she was, yeah.
He made her accountable.
Yeah. There was no... If you feel well, I hope you feel better. I'm so sorry things didn't go well. It's get it done and call me back. Now, it's not a technique I really would encourage you to use with your clients, but you can see that Thomas would made it very effective for him. So what if you get a high D as a client? Are high Ds, you think, good clients or bad clients?
Well, they're action-oriented, so that helps. Yeah.
Okay, so they're action-oriented. What else?
Oh, they're, well, they you know, it's the arrogance there. They think they don't need coaching.
And that's one of the challenges of them. They think they don't need coaching. That's a problem.
Yeah.
they recover quickly and are able to move on.
There, that's a big aspect of a high D. High Ds make mistakes. They go, oops, sorry about that, and they move right on. They're not going to fret about it, not going to worry about it. They're going to make it. They're going to say, oh, learn from that, and they're going to do the next thing. So the challenge of the high D, though, is that they don't understand how others perceive them. I know I'm a warm and wonderful human being, damn it. Why don't people see that? And they miss the emotions of others. This is true in the workplace. It can be true at home. They care, but they're not as closely tuned in to the emotions of other people as the other behavioral styles are. So they can be a little bossy. They can make demands of their coworkers and spouses as opposed to creating... put in the fender. So when you coach the high D, you have to think about, help them think about what they're doing affects others and about the emotions of others. You have to be aware of their blind spots, aware of their tendencies, help bring balance back to them. You'll see there where it says challenges coaching the high D. It says, don't think they need coaching. Very oftentimes true. Act before they think. View coaching as soft. Let's go back to the first one on the list, though. Don't think they need coaching. So we have the best and worst of the high D we discussed before. When the high D says, huh, I think there's a problem here. I should get a coach. They are then going to buy in 100% to getting things done because they said this needs to get better. And they're taking action to get results to where they want to go. The challenge is when the boss says to them, Susie, I think you need some coaching. I've hired someone here to help you with this. You have a call every Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Be on those calls. Susie didn't buy into it.
Exactly what I got right now.
Yeah. So, and this happens a lot of time with executives. So, yeah. Personally, I'm always leery when someone says, yeah, I want you to coach someone who works for me. Okay. I'll talk to them. I'll see what they really have buy into. Sometimes they'll try and sell me something that, you know, oh, yeah, I really have bought into this when I can tell they haven't. But when they do buy into it, when it's their idea, when they see the reason for change, they are phenomenal clients. All right.
Can I just suggest something?
Sure.
And I could be not sure if this is right or wrong, but I think that maybe one way to approach a client who is a high D and resistant in a case where they're referred to you is to find a common ground, something that you know they have an interest in, and maybe pursue it from that point of view.
Yeah. Yeah, because they tend to be rather self-centered that way. So what is important to them, and what are they willing to do to get, oops, the result they want? So to find a common ground is a great way to do that.
Thank you.
So some good questions for the high D. What are you going to do? They love that question. That's action. Okay, I think action is great. How will this impact others? Now, seriously, when you ask this question of a high D, you want to be as much as possible specific. So, Bob, I've been discussing this problem here with Susie. You're going to take these actions. How is Susie going to react to that? And if you've taught them about DISC at all, you can say, So what style is Susie? And I think you should approach Susie on this. Walking through the emotional part slowly is not going to be natural to them. If you're a high I or a high S, it could be very natural to you, but not to them. Ask about alternatives. They love alternatives. Well, yes, different ways we can take action. What you need is a result. When can you do this? They'll relate to all these questions directly. They expect these kind of questions because they are results-oriented. So we're going to play both to their strengths to get the results and their weaknesses on the emotions of others. Be sure you cover both those things in your session with the high D client. Questions? Do we all love the high D's?
Yes.
Said the D.
Yes.
It takes a while to get to know the D. They're like onions. You kind of have to peel away a layer at a time.
Yeah.
You can certainly appreciate their directness.
Yeah. They're not going to intentionally hide things from you, but they're also not going to display things for you. So it is like an onion. They'll tell you what you see is what you get. I can only see what's on the surface. I need to peel it back. I had a friend of mine who was a high D, and he used to say, because deep down inside, I'm really very shallow. And it was a joke, but he actually was a very caring person. But it didn't surface until he dug down to see how much he really did care.
Right. Yeah, I know somebody like that, and very caring person, but doesn't show the emotion. Well, you know, we can get through this, or, yeah, it's very sad, but she'll be fine, and we'll just move on from here. And that's the kind of response that, and so as you're thinking about all these things, as we're going over all this, I see how he, like,
yeah.
It's interesting.
Helping them identify emotions in others is really something that helps them move forward more quickly. I like to teach IDs the DISC behavioral style because we can focus on the other styles and what they need. Oh, and by the way, if you give them what they need, you can get even more results. Really? Oh.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
If you focus on what the other styles need, tell us about the high D, you understand what those other styles need, you can get even more results from them. That's music to their ears. I can get more results? Yes, you can.
Would you say that the high D would be less lucky, I guess, more reluctant to doing long-term coaching? When you think that usually we look at 3 months as a minimum for or an average to get someone to quote unquote change their habits, but the D is saying, well, I have I'm getting the results that I want, so I don't need to go any further. What do you do with that?
I think you asked the question about what have you gotten so far? What else could you get here? What else can we do here to make you even more effective? And then the always, what would happen if type questions.
I'm very big on the what ifs.
Yeah. I had a high D client I coached for 2 years. And he saw results, and he kept saying, is there more? Yeah, let's peel back some more. And he'd use meetings as a way to come back and give me feedback and say, so we had this meeting and these things happened. What should I have done? Of course, I wouldn't tell him. Asking questions about who was in the room, what their style was, what do they need. And he'd begin to work through the process of learning how to coach people in the middle of meetings. By coach, I mean asking the right questions to dig out what they really wanted to get what he really wanted.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. So high D's are fascinating. We love the high D's, but we love the high I's even more. Why? Because they're just plain lovable.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, hi.
Isn't it true? So
we are. We are lovable.
How do you recognize a high I when you first meet them?
They're awesome.
They're awesome.
They approach you most of the time rather than you having to approach them.
They will approach you, absolutely. What will they say?
What's shaking?
Hey, what's shaking? How you doing? They got a big smile on their face. Hey, I love that pendant. That's just beautiful. Where'd you get that? Is that an antique?
Yeah, they're very fashionable and like to do things that bring attention. Because
they're not beige.
I'm sorry?
But they're not beige.
They're definitely not beige.
They're not dressed in muted colors. Yes, you're right. They tend to dress more flamboyantly.
Yeah.
So they're pretty easy to identify. They kind of stand out in the crowd. And if you go to a party, look around and see who's around, who they're all talking to and who's laughing and who's talking and say, who's laughing at that? There you go. Find your high eyes. Hang out with them. They're fun. But what's the high eye afraid of?
Not geez.
Not being
rejection?
Liked.
Not being liked.
Yeah, not being liked. It's fun. You do this kind of work in a group, and you find the high eye in the room, and you go, Sally, I got bad news for you. We had a little discussion here at the break, and the truth is, no one here really likes you. I mean, they work with you because they have to, but they really don't like you that much. And watch this person's face just fall. Oh, you're just kidding me. Oh, man, he had me going there for a minute. I thought really no one liked me. And then they'll check with their friends on the next break. You guys do like me, right? Everything's still okay? Yeah. So they tend to be a little sensitive about people liking them, which also means they'll make decisions based on what might be most popular versus what might be right. Let me give you a descriptor here of the high I at their very best. They're upbeat and energetic. They're master communicators who keep you enthralled for hours with their stories. They can sell ice to Eskimos. They're natural leaders. And their energy is contagious and spreads to everyone around them. They're quick to smile, quick with a joke.
To light up your smile.
Looking for ways to have fun with people. Yeah. They have good instincts about people. They surround themselves with people who are anxious to make a difference. Their natural charm and powers of persuasion make them peacemakers at home and in the office. They like to go out and have a good time and often find themselves the center of attention, which, by the way, they love.
Karaoke is a wonderful thing.
Karaoke is a wonderful thing. I can't sing. It doesn't matter. It's about having fun. Yeah. So now here's the story of Susie the High Eye. She thinks she found a home in advertising and marketing. She is full of creative ideas. Makes good connections with other people, with the customers. Loves flexibility of her job. Her work is unstructured, and that fits her personality perfectly. And that consists of working with teams of others to create new ideas. They have a creative space they use together where they can play games and bounce things ideas off each other. Now, being a manager, there's always paperwork to have to do, but she'll do the paperwork and charge the batteries by going out with friends and having a few drinks. So what's her challenges? Well, managing budgets has always been a bit of a project for her. Doesn't play to her strength. And that cost analysis by department, that just really has to wait until she's in the mood to do that, because that's no fun at all. Doesn't like what paperwork interferes with her creative juices. You know, just last night, she was out and made three new very best friends. No folks like that? Yeah.
Definitely.
And they're great people to be around, and you love them. But they make best friends, you know, the BFF, you know, a couple times a day. Now, let's discuss the other side of that coin. The high I at their worst. So at their worst, they come across as unorganized, unfocused, and maybe more than a little bit shallow. While their stories are amusing, the outfits that are around the high I themselves, other people playing smaller, unimportant parts. The work is haphazard. They don't follow up on things, and their assignments tend not get done on time. Well, their overwhelming optimism is unrealistic, and they create some unachievable goals. They trust their employees do the right thing without any regard to the employee's skill. They're slow to acknowledge hiring mistakes because of their unshakable faith in people and in themselves. Kind of the high I at their worst. And here's the corresponding story for that one. So Frank is pretty excited about his new job, network planning. He knows that in that job, he gets rubbed elbows with people who are top of the company and make good presentations at least a couple times a month to these top executives. So all these maps are across on his walls now, and his office he moved into, all these network maps, he doesn't need those. He'll take all those things down, replace them with pictures of him with in his football youth and people he knows that are famous. Engineers who work for him, they could do the map stuff. He's not going to be involved with that himself. So he spent most of the morning planning his vacation in Mexico with a bunch of his friends. They're going to have a great time. They really are. So he has to get on his break conference call in a little bit. But the thing is that it's a good time to work on his Facebook page at that point. So Frank's challenge, love those presentations he's going to make. I hope there's no really detailed questions there, because he didn't have any detailed answers. He only has so many hours of work, and then the personal life takes over. And, you know, corporate only invites engineers to those meetings, so we have to do something or just wing it at those meetings. So there's your high I, and the challenge of the high I at their worst. See the two sides of the coin there?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Some people like to sit there and say, well, high D's are bad and high I's are good. Not the way it is. Not the way it is. At their best and at their worst on all behavioral styles. So, and there are high eye coaches. Wow. One of the challenges, if you're a high eye and you're a coach, well, you may accept a little less than the client than they can really give. You may trust them too much. You may not challenge them enough. You may want to tell your stories about things that you had that were similar to this versus really coaching them and giving, asking the questions to help them find their answers. You may have great chats with the client rather than actually coaching them.
I apologize for my dog.
He's a high D. Your questions may get long and involved and wander down rabbit trails, and they may not be aware of how much they talk versus listening in the coaching session. Does that mean high eyes can't be great coaches?
Nope.
Not at all. Because high eyes can help those people when they're down, when they're depressed. They can bring energy to a coaching session. Be conscious of what their tendencies are, as do the other styles as well. They can be phenomenal coaches.
Hey, Dave, this is Donna.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just going to offer this for, this is a suggestion. If you are on the call and you hit star 6, it will mute your line so nobody can hear your background noise. And I just didn't know if everybody was aware of that.
Amen. Thank you.
Good point. If there's no mute button on your phone, you need to mute. Star 6 will mute you. Star 6 also will unmute you. So if you want to go on mute for a few minutes, you can go on star 6. If you want to come off mute, hit star 6.
I have muted. I wanted to know if you guys were still hearing the dog in the background.
Absolutely.
I apologize. I know you can hear him now, but I had muted on my end. I didn't think you could hear that. So let me do the star 6 again. Is that better?
Nope, there he is.
No,
nope.
He's still whooping.
Sorry about that. Okay, star 6, right?
Okay, we don't hear you anymore.
That does sound quiet.
Yes, it worked.
All right, good. All right, so the high eye as a client. Their strengths, they come to the call every week, upbeat, optimistic, ready to take on the world. And they're going to tell you everything in the session. It may not be relevant, but they'll tell you everything in the session, though. Blind spots, mentioned before, they can be so optimistic that they can be unrealistic. They may not see the depth of the challenge they're facing. They may want to take what they've heard and what they're facing and say, it's not really that bad. Well, you know what? It may actually be that bad. And the big challenge, I think, with a high eye is they will sit there and go, oh, I see it. I know what I can do. They'll talk about it, have great action plans, but their follow-through may not be good. So they need an accountability partner. They need to agree with you that you can hold them accountable for their actions. They need to know that if you're going to do that, you're going to ask them what they've gotten done, they have to give you back honest answers because you're going to check on them.
And high eyes are very resistant to that.
Yes, they are.
They'll very, very resistant. Not at all.
Yeah. So because of their natural upbeat, optimistic behavior, they may also avoid conflict. So you'll hear about problems, and they'll just try to say, how are you going to solve this problem? And they'll give you elaborate answers that don't involve telling the person, by the way, this is a problem. Can we talk about it? So they want to avoid the conflict. And the technique that they like to use is to begin to respond and then go off someplace with it. No place near where your question was. So a technique I've used with high eyes before, I tend, at least at first, not to interrupt them. But if I say, what are your plans, what are you going to do about this? And they give me a long answer that involves, you know, making cakes and birds and bees. They get done and say, that's great. What are you going to do about this? You just asked me that question. You know, you didn't give me an answer. Okay. Then they'll get more focused. You'll also find they have an awful lot of number one priorities. Everything is really, really important. And if they have the challenge of being too optimistic and unrealistic, they don't see how others see them. And that's a real challenge. So I joke about high eyes. I mean, I know a lot of them. I love 98% of them. I will tell you this. Never take restaurant advice from a high eye.
Because every meal's delicious?
That's the best ever. They've got the best pecan pie in the whole world. It's frozen. Yeah. So I joke about that, but I seriously, when the high eyes tell me, oh, you got to go here, I tend to take it with a grain of salt. Because they do tend to be very optimistic, very upbeat, and they tend to exaggerate the quality sometimes. Do we love our high eyes? Of course we do, but we're aware.
Wow. Sorry, I'll unmute again. By the way, I'm a high eye. I hope you guys are not mad at me.
And so it must be really hard for you to put the mute on.
So, question you ask the high eye, ask them how they feel, because they want to tell you. Ask them, what could go wrong here? And again, this is the kind of question, because it's contrary to their natural state, you have to be willing to dig deep and say, no, you're telling me nothing. Let's walk through this. Suppose this happens. What might happen if this were to go wrong? Make them think through the consequences themselves. Ask them if it matters what others think. Because they tend to get, again, a little self-focused sometimes. So find out if others, how others are going to play in this equation. When can you realistically accomplish this? High eyes will sit there and say, yeah, I'll have it done by tomorrow. Yeah, it's about a 3-week project, so let's push off a little bit here. Focus on getting this part done by next session. To do that, oh, I can do that easily. Let's focus on this piece. So help them break bigger things down to smaller pieces that are more manageable and hold them accountable for it. And lastly, how are you going to know if it worked or not? They have great ideas, but they don't focus on the results like the deed tends to do. So say, how will you know if this worked? What result are you trying to get here? I'm trying to get this. All right. How do you know if you've got that? How are you going to find that out? So that's our high eye. Delightful people. Love to be around them. Questions or comments about the high eye?
I have a question. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead. Go first.
My question is, Dave, at some point are we going to, because I scored high on the I and high on the D, so at some point, yeah, there you go. You're just, you're charismatic bulldozer. Right? So at some point are we going to go over in depth how those two blend together or can affect each other, et cetera?
Oh, what a great straight man you are, straight woman you are in this case. Yeah. So, actually, too often when people learn about DISC, They learn about D's, I's, S's, and C's and think, wow, I'm now an expert. The reality is most folks are a combination of two and sometimes three styles. We're going to spend two full sessions together talking about combinations, how they play together, how sometimes it's very natural how they play together, and sometimes it's not so obvious. So, yeah, we'll spend two full sessions doing that.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay?
Yeah, because I'm a mess.
Other questions or comments?
This is Yolanda. I just wanted to unmute to let you guys know I was laughing with you all the time, especially when you said, it must be hard for you to mute. So thank you. Love you guys. And I gave him cookies that quieted him down.
Well, you know, it's funny because you got the dog right. I got three dogs here, and mine are all being quiet tonight. So they used to be being on the phone, and they know that's time to go lay down, not to come bug Daddy at this point in time. So yeah. We have a house full of dogs.
He was good last night. I don't know.
I think he's a high D and took offense to what we were saying about the high Ds earlier. That's just my opinion.
Probably, because he talks back to me when I try to tell him something.
So in talking about the Ds and the Is, they're actually both fairly easy to spot when you meet them in public.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about the S's and C's in our next session, and they're not quite as easy to spot as the D's and the I's are. So we'll discuss that and how to help you identify the S's and the C's in our next session. Okay?
Yeah, thanks.
Sounds very good.
Sounds good.
So everybody have a great week, and I'll talk to you guys all again next Wednesday.
Thank you.
Dave, are you still there?